Okay, now we are recording. My name is Andy Butler. I'm here with Maddie Heimlich. The date is April 22nd. The time is 10:04 a.m. I am in New Palestine. Okay, now I want to briefly review the informed consent and deed of gift document you signed. This interview is for the COVID-19 Oral History Project associated with the Journal of the Plague Year, a COVID-19 archive. The COVID-19 Oral History Project is a rapid response oral history focused on achieving the lived experience, archiving the lived experience of the COVID-19 pandemic. We have designed this project so that professional researchers and the broader public can create and upload the oral histories to our open access and open source database. This study will help us collect narratives and understandings about COVID-19, as well as help us better understand the impacts of the pandemic over time. The recordings, demographic information, and the verbatim transcripts will be deposited in the Journal of the Plague Year, a COVID-19 archive, and the Indiana University Public Library system for the use of researchers and the general public. Do you have any questions about the project that I can answer?
No, I think it's clear. Thank you.
Okay. Taking part in the study is voluntary. You may choose not to take part, but you may leave the study anytime. Leaving the study will not result in any penalty or loss of benefits to which you are entitled. Your decision whether or not to participate in the study will not affect your current or future relationships with Indiana University, IAPUI, or the IAPUI Arts and Humanities Institute. Participating in this project means that your interviews will be recorded in digital video and or audio format and may be transcribed. The recordings and possible transcriptions of my interviews, copies of any supplementary documents or additional photos that you wish to share, and the informed consent and deed of gift may be deposited in the Journal of the Plague Year, a COVID-19 archive, and the Indiana University Library system, and will be available to both researchers and the general public. Your name and other means of identification will not be confidential. Do you have any questions?
No, I understand.
Okay. In addition to your signed document, would you please offer a verbal confirmation that you understand and agree to these terms?
I understand and agree to these terms.
Thank you. I am also asking that you verbally confirm that you have agreed that your interview will be made available under the following license: the COVID-19 Oral History Project, the Journey of the Plague Year, a COVID-19 archive, and the Trustees of Indiana University, IU, acting through its agents, employees, or representatives, has an unlimited right to reproduce, use, exhibit, display, perform, broadcast, create derivative works from, and distribute the oral history materials in any manner or media now existing or hereafter developed in perpetuity throughout the world. I agree that the oral history materials may be used by the voices from the waterways and IU, including its assigns and transferees, for any purpose, including but not limited to marketing, advertising, publicity, or other promotional purposes. I agree that IU will have final editorial authority over the use of the oral history materials, and I waive any right to inspect or approve of any future use of the oral history materials. Moreover, I agree that the public has the right to use the materials under the terms of fair use.
I agree.
Okay. Finally, I want to ask for a verbal confirmation that you have agreed that your interview will be made pu available to the public immediately.
I agree.
Okay, that's it with the legal stuff. Now we'll move on to the interview. Okay, first
Okay.
question. This is, we'll start with some background questions just to establish some things. What is your name and what are the primary things you do on a day-to-day basis? For example, jobs, activities, etc.
My name is Holly Settles, and day-to-day activities, Monday through Friday. Yes, I go to work. I'm working from home since the shutdown from COVID. Otherwise, I just routine things around the house. I cook, I clean, I take care of the cats. Pretty boring. But yeah, my routine activities weekends, I really try to get out in the yard and do some gardening. Occasionally, you know, do Zoom meetings with our friends just to keep in touch. But pretty much that's it.
Okay. Where do you live and what is it like to live there?
I live in Indianapolis, Indiana. I live in a small area called Northern Estates on the northwest side. It's an old established neighborhood. So it is lovely to live here. We have old, mature trees in the yards. Our neighbors, most of us have lived in our houses for 20 plus years, so we all need to know each other. There's no through traffic through our neighborhood, so it's very quiet. You know, you can easily get out and, you know, walk around the neighborhood, run into people you know. It's just a really pleasant place to be. It's not far, you know, 10 minutes down I-65, and I can be in Indianapolis. So we're very close to anything going on downtown. If we want to go to the theater or out to eat, we just live in a really nice area in Indianapolis. It's convenient to everything. And yet it's very quiet. You know, it's an old established neighborhood. So we got the best of both worlds here.
Okay. When you first learned about COVID-19, what were your thoughts about it? How have your thoughts changed since then?
I guess when you first heard about it, if I think back to the very first time, you know, there was probably something on the news about how this was in China mostly. And, you know, I didn't really give it a lot of thought. Kind of like when the SARS epidemic happened, it didn't really impact the US, and I thought it would be more like that. So probably heard about it, December 2019-ish, they started saying that there was a novel virus in China, and you went, okay. We had already had a plan to go travel in January, so we did. Thank goodness we did that early. we went down to Costa Rica, and then after we came back in February, you know, where it started to be more of a, and now it's in the US and now it's spreading, that's when you started thinking really differently about it. That the potential, and at that time it was still just potential. You know, you didn't change anything you were doing. You still went to work. You still did, you know, but it was a bigger blip on the radar screen. I don't think it was really impactful until the day they announced at work that, you know, everybody go home and don't come back, work from home for the next, and again, 2 weeks. We thought, yeah, 2 weeks, 4 weeks, it'll be over. And as time drug on, of course, the attitudes towards it changed, both, you know, I think for everybody individually and then, you know, globally. But initially, yeah, initially it was like, oh, you know, there's another novel virus in China. And until we went into a lockdown, it really didn't change anything about my life. You know, didn't really think it would be this impactful.
Okay. What issues have concerned you most about the COVID-19 pandemic?
Oh, the issues that concern me most, that it wasn't taken seriously at the beginning when it became, you know, like I said, for me, it was in March where it was like, oh, this is a lot bigger. And yes, it is, you know, first it was an epidemic in China. Now it's a pandemic and it's global. And I think that it wasn't taken seriously in the U.S., mostly, I think, due to the politics at the time. I don't think the Trump administration wanted to admit it was a problem. You know, and all the, oh, it'll go away, you know, it'll just disappear like a miracle, it'll go away, was very misleading to the public. I'm getting off focus, Andy. What was the gist of the question again? What was impactful?
What's concerned you? And don't worry about going off topic. That's sort of how these things are kind of designed.
Okay. But yeah, we were, as a nation, didn't take it seriously, didn't put anything in place to prevent the spread. And I guess for me, it was just, I don't know, flabbergasting that as numbers started coming in, the number of people, you know, how contagious it was, the number of people that were getting it, the number of people that were getting seriously ill and needed to be hospitalized and put on ventilators. And in spite of all of that, people were still denying that this was a serious health issue. And I guess that concerns me too today, because there's still a lot of, you know, people that don't seem to, you know, believe, they think it's a scam. I don't know how you get a scam when you have so many numbers that say otherwise. I wonder, you know, concerned about how it's going to impact the future. You know, like everything, you'll go back to some kind of normal. I do believe that, you know, the numbers will come down enough that it'll kind of fade into the background, kind of like, you know, the flu does. You know, we all know the flu's out there, but we don't take extra precautions not to get it necessarily. And this will eventually, I think, get to that place. But I think that there will be societal changes that are probably a little more permanent. I don't know what they're going to be. You know, are masks going to be, you know, just as they are in China? People wear masks kind of routinely, regardless if there's an imminent threat or not. Is that going to become a norm here? I do like the way that some masks have become fashion statements. There's a lot of very fancy ones out there, some very cute ones. I don't know, that produced a whole new global industry probably. So there will be impacts that are long-term. I think some will be positive. I think some will be negative. I just don't know what they're going to be. You know, I look at it as anything that impacts us that this greatly for this length of time has to leave some lasting changes to how we interact and, you know, what will be required. You know, are we going to need a vaccine passport to get on airplanes? I have to admit, I am not at all jazzed at the moment about the thought of traveling in an airplane, and don't know when I'll become comfortable with that again. So is that going to be one of the permanent changes? I don't know. It's going to be a different world, even when we come out of the, you know, on the other end of this tunnel we're in. And I guess anything that is, for me, that is unknown, I don't know what it's going to be. I have concerns with, right? It's just fear of the unknown. I have it like everybody else.
Okay, if you're ready to, as long as you don't have any more to say on that question, I don't mean to cut you off, you're still talking. Yep. I'm going to move on to some employment questions. Is that okay?
Absolutely.
Okay. You mentioned the work from home earlier. Has COVID-19 affected your job in any other ways?
Well, I think because we're all working from home, we feel a little more disconnected. You know, I used to like going into the office and, you know, sitting next to my coworkers, and, you know, you could get immediate feedback from, you know, situations where it's like, oh, I just got, you know, an invite to a meeting or an email that, you know, is a little strange. I haven't run into this before. Does anybody have experience with it? You know, and you'd get just some spontaneous conversations and feedback and ideas. And I miss that. I miss that a lot. You feel like, you know, you're very much on your own little island. There's a lot more, it seems like there's a lot more meetings just because we don't have that contact, and you have to plan for it now. So if I want to get feedback on an issue that I'm having, I have to set up time with somebody to talk to them. And it just really, it slows down a lot of what your work is. You know, it's like, I should be working on writing this document, but instead I'm sitting in meetings trying to get, you know, feedback, advice, inform people of what, you know, I'm working on and doing. So that's been a little frustrating. It's definitely changed the way I work, because I normally have at least one of the three cats trying to help me walk across my keyboard. They've done some things I've never seen before. And just routine things around the house. It's nice to be working from home sometimes, right? I can do laundry all day long, or, you know, stop. And if I need to, you know, set up my crock pot for dinner, you know, I can do that during the day. You know, just the things, routine stuff that can get done because you are at home. So that is a positive aspect of it. Finding a place to work from home on a permanent basis, I didn't have it set up, you know, thinking I was only going to be here maybe 2 to 4 weeks. I set up in the dining room, which is really ergonomically horrible. And I needed to find a better solution for those things and set up a permanent office. So, you know, had to get a desk, had to get, you know, a new monitor, things like that, just to make it more comfortable, and that I wasn't, you know, by the end of the day, having sat in the uncomfortable chairs, you know, being achy and hurt. I have gone to the chiropractor a lot more because of that. So maybe that has impacted my health a little bit. It has been a strange adaptation. Just lots of things that I hadn't thought about needing, you know, the desk, the new chair, the new monitor, just to make it a doable, non-painful event to work from home. What other weird things about working from home? Just, again, for me, it's the biggest impact is the isolation and trying to stay connected to the rest of our group and the, you know, what's going on in the rest of the company. That I have found very difficult. Other things are that, you know, in my line of work, a lot of our affiliates need documents, but they need the original documents. So they need them signed in wet ink. They call them wet ink signatures. And I have to get those to the affiliate. So trying to get original documents to other places has been a challenge. Finally figured that out. And now I have my own UPS account so that I can easily send packages and have them picked up from the house and delivered you know, globally, basically. So that's been another odd task that I had to learn how to do that I never thought I would.
Okay. Has COVID-19 changed your employment status?
It hasn't changed my employment status. I don't think it's actually, I'm lucky in that way that really it hasn't impacted the status of the job. It's created some, again, you know, novel challenges, but the job itself has not changed. It's pretty much the same expectations, the same workloads, the same, you know. So no, I wouldn't say it's changed the status.
Okay. Do you have any concerns about COVID-19 on your employment or the economy more broadly?
I don't have concerns regarding COVID-19 in terms of my employment, my particular situation. If we never go back to the office, we've demonstrated that we can figure out how to do this all from home. So I don't feel a personal impact that way. And I guess I'm very, you know, that's extremely fortunate because there are so many industries, you know, the economy in general, again, that's going to be one of those things as we come out the other side, you know, that will change. I mean, we learned what essential workers are, right? We never thought of, you know, a lot of the people that have to go out and go to work and face the epidemic or the pandemic. And they are essential to keeping the economy and keeping just everything going. I mean, food supplies, I think in terms of the food chain, right? All of those people need to still be doing their jobs. They are essential. You know, all of our farmers, the people that are moving the food from, you know, the farms to processing plants or slaughterhouses or to the stores and the people that have to stock the shelves and all of that, we found are essential workers. And I guess it's the realization that, you know, the essential workers really are the people in the lower income brackets, the people who are doing those jobs. And I don't think that there's been enough respect for them and all the things that they do that just keep our society going, you know, not just the economy, and then all the frontline workers in healthcare. What extremely difficult jobs that they have and the risks that they have to take is, I mean, really, it's incredible. And things that really you didn't think about before, you just took all of that for granted. So I hope that we have a better understanding of that and that they are critical and maybe they shouldn't be at the bottom of our economic status, that they really should have, I guess, especially during the pandemic, you know, it's like, maybe we should have considered hazard pay where you get a little extra money for doing a job that's a little more dangerous than everybody else does. So yeah, I think it's economically, it's created some industries, you know, mask making and, you know, other things, toilet paper, you know, there's just things that have really taken off that were odd. And then all of the industries that weren't considered essential and were high risk, all of the entertainment industries, I mean, those are really struggling to survive. So yeah, there's going to be long-term economic impact for in different ways. Some places, you know, some areas are going to do well, and then there's so many that have suffered, and small, individually owned, not the chain restaurants and the chain things, those are going to survive. But it's sad to see how many individual businesses couldn't keep their doors open, or ones that got creative about how to keep their doors open. They were producing one product, and then because of the pandemic, you know, they switched over lines and started making hand sanitizers. And, you know, the ingenuity of a lot of places to be able to do that was great. But for the ones that couldn't, I think we'll see the economic impacts of that for a long time, right? People who've lost their jobs, had to close their businesses, and now we have a lot more people on unemployment or welfare, and how our government systems are going to need to support that until things get back to whatever the normal will now be, and whether or not those areas can ever recover fully. I see it as a very long-term economic impact globally, right? We know mostly what goes on in the U.S., but it's going on all over the world. So how governments globally respond to that, I don't think we know that yet either. But yeah, it's going to have a huge economic impact. Already does. So I don't think I have a whole lot more on that one.
I asked a question and I forgot to unmute, so.
I understand that.
Okay, so just one last question on employment. Has the COVID-19 pandemic affected the employment of people you know? In what ways?
People I know from work, I don't think that it's really, you know, again, our industry, at least those of us who are office-based, I don't think it's had a big impact. For the ones that are field-based and have to go out and visit customers, that has become an issue on just how to do that. But I think that everybody around that, it got worked out. People that I know who, I don't know anyone, I can't think of anyone directly who has just flat out lost their job because of this. I know some of the, you know, the teachers, I have some good friends who are teachers, and it's been horribly difficult for them. You know, the balance between when do you go back to school and when do you not, you know, do e-learning, and having to develop e-learning. And I think this is going to take a toll on the education system too. Students, you know, do better when they're in class in person. I think from what I've been told that, you know, having sat out a year and a half or more, has actually put them behind. So, and the school, you know, the teachers are just, you know, mixed feelings about when it's time to go back. And really, they haven't had a whole lot to say about it. You know, individual school districts have dictated that. I guess I don't run in the big circles of the frontline essential workers. I do have a friend who is a respiratory therapist, and she has just been exhausted, both, you know, physically because of the hours needed to be worked, and emotionally, having to work with patients that, you know, they're dying, and knowing that, you know, they've been in the hospital maybe for 2 or 3 weeks. They're in intensive care. They haven't been able to see any of their friends and loved ones because they're in isolation, and having them pass with, excuse me, only being, you know, you're the only people that they see. And she says it's really hard to be the last, you know, before they came into the ICU, they didn't even know her. And they're so sick, they really don't know her well. But they're the last person that they see.
Yeah.
And that has been, stories from her are really hard to listen to.
Okay. Sorry, I think I'm going to move on to a new topic as long as you think you're good on that one and have nothing else to say. Is that all right?
That's fine.
Okay. Now, you've talked about this a little bit, I suppose, in work, but how has COVID-19 affected you and or your family's day-to-day activities?
Again, day-to-day activities. Oh, it wasn't too exciting to begin with before COVID-19, but it has impacted, you know, we don't go out as much. I don't do my own grocery shopping much anymore. March of 2020 and things were on the rise in terms of, you know, the infection rate, I looked at, you know, when it started using the shipped shopping to do my grocery shopping. So that's been impacted. When I was doing my own grocery shopping and you go out to the stores and people, again, at the beginning especially, weren't taking this very seriously. So no one was, you know, wearing masks and, you know, they hadn't changed their behaviors at a time where I thought it was appropriate to change behaviors. So again, I relied on the frontline workers and I had somebody do my shopping for me. I am lucky that I'm privileged to be able to do that. And so that also in some ways impacts your day-to-day activities, because when you do your own shopping, you can make spontaneous choices while you're in the store, right? It's like, okay, I wanted to make something with zucchini, but when I got to the produce section, the zucchini looked so bad that I wasn't going to, you know, I could change my mind and change it to cauliflower, where your ship shopper, when you ask for zucchini, here's what they have, and that's what you get. So the quality of your stuff sometimes was a little different, and you'd have to adjust your dinner plans accordingly, or just, you know, not being able to do that would impact how I would, you know, go about making dinner, what I would make on what days, a lot of adjustments with that, how far in advance. When you first started using shipped, I think they were one of the companies that got overwhelmed, and they didn't have enough shoppers. So when you went to place an order, it was almost 10 days before you could find a window to have it delivered. So I had to start doing meal plans almost 2 weeks in advance, which I never did before. You know, my weekly routine was to sit down with my coffee on Sunday morning and go, what do I want to buy from the store and what am I going to make this week? You know, so it was something I thought of in the morning, and I went out and shopped in the afternoon, and we were set. And having to start planning things 2 weeks in advance at first was very challenging. So that's gotten better. Of course, you know, the day-to-day stuff, just going anywhere shopping, you know, wanting to go to the hardware store and just pick up something, or all of that. I'm not much of a shopper. Amazon, you know, oh, I have relied on them tremendously for, you know, just about everything. Again, I'm fortunate that I can afford all those conveniences. And, you know, the people that deliver to my door, I appreciate them a whole lot more than I did in the past. Other day-to-day stuff, of course, there is the, I used to go to work, so my husband would have all day to himself to go run whatever his errands were or go do things. And now that we are both at home all the time, and I'm working from home, so I'm pretty sure that it has cramped his style tremendously. He tries very hard not to, you know, get in my way when I'm working or make noise in the house at all. We don't have a very big house, so if he's in the living room watching TV and I'm in the back room and I'm on a conference call, you know, you can hear the TV. So he's had to arrange his schedule around my work schedule sometimes, which I'm sure, while he has been very gracious about doing it, probably hasn't gotten over well all the time. Other day-to-day activities. I don't know. It's just, it has been an adjustment, but I don't think they've all been that difficult. Because we've been able to find ways around them. I stopped using Shipt late last summer for a while because I thought, you know, people were finally taking it seriously. There was a mask mandate to go in the stores. The numbers had been going down, and I had felt comfortable at that time. But as soon as they started spiking again after the holidays, I've gone right back to Shipt. And now I've developed a relationship with one of the Shipt shoppers. We've fallen into a routine. I place my order on Wednesday to be delivered on Saturday. And now she looks for my orders. And so I've probably had her for my shopper for the last 8 to 10 weeks. So I've actually kind of developed a relationship with her. I know she's in occupational therapy, graduating this year, and, you know, as a kid, you know, she'll ask me about stuff that I'm buying. I've bought a big tub of lard. And it was kind of like, what do you do with lard? And one of my COVID, there's something I've done, my new COVID hobby is making bird suet, because I like to watch the birds. I have bird feeders out. And the bird suet that I normally like to purchase was discontinued, and I couldn't find anyone that I liked as well. So I developed my own recipe, and I now make my own bird suet. And that's what the lard is for, is making suet. So it's been fun to kind of, I've never met the shopper. I've caught glimpses of her out the window as she's delivering things. But it's kind of fun that we have developed a routine and a relationship that I never thought would happen, because I never expected to do Shipt, and I never expected to have developed that kind of routine that allowed for having, you know, the same person over and over again. And now we kind of look for each other. So that would be another day-to-day thing, or week-to-week that was interesting. Now that I am fully vaccinated and the numbers are going down, I am probably comfortable enough to go do my own grocery shopping. But until she graduates, I feel like I need to support her. So I'm not grocery shopping on my own anymore, because I want to support this girl until she gets her diploma.
Okay. Sorry if I'm cutting you off. Let me know and I'll...
No. You're good.
Okay, I think on family, we'll just have one more question. Has the COVID-19 outbreak affected how you associate and communicate with friends and family? And if it has, in what ways?
Oh, absolutely, right? Not being able to get together, or not being... Jason and I were not comfortable enough to go visit friends and family for most of the year. So for the holidays, our normal schedule would be to spend Thanksgiving with his family, because they're local in Indianapolis. My family is up in the Chicago area. So we would spend Thanksgiving with Jason's family. His family celebrates Christmas Eve, so we would go do Christmas Eve with his family and then turn around Christmas morning and drive up to the Chicago area and spend it with my family. None of those things happened in 2020. His family did opt to do a Thanksgiving dinner, and we opted not to go. They did cancel Christmas after they saw the spikes in COVID, that no one in their family was then comfortable either. So yes, how we interacted with all of them has been very different. We have set up Zoom meetings with some of the family, and we've set up Zoom meetings with some of our friends. I think we've all been a little more active on Facebook. I was never a big Facebook fan, but I found that's there's a lot more being posted just about, you know, like you said, day-to-day activities, you know, photos of just things that people are doing. You know, I get lots of photos of my nieces or my nephews, nieces and nephew. And so, yeah, I think communication has been different. And getting together with anybody outside of your own little bubble. I didn't even know we had bubbles before. Up until recently, and again, most people that would be in my bubble are in my age bracket, right? So we are the over 60 crowd. So we were some of the first vaccinated. And getting together with friends we hadn't seen for a year. Right. And that was really nice. Recently started being brave enough to go out to restaurants. And I have found that for me personally, we went out maybe, 4 weeks ago with some friends. And the restaurant was still practicing a lot of social distancing. It's a place that we had frequented before, so it was noticeable that, you know, some tables had been taken out so that they could spread out more. They enforced a mask mandate, so if you were not sitting at your table, you know, coming into the restaurant, leaving the restaurant, going to the bathroom, whatever, you had to have your mask on. And I was very comfortable with that. We went out maybe 2 weeks ago to a different restaurant, that seemed to, while they had the sign on the door that said masks were required, it was not being followed. And I thought that their tables were way too close together. And I was very uncomfortable. I didn't care for that experience at all. It was nice to see our friends, but if someone suggests going to back to that restaurant, it won't be on my list. And it's also taught me to look into the practices of a restaurant before we choose another one. So I think those things have changed for me anyway. I like to think that we are getting back to a little bit on the normal side, but even looking forward, we were talking about at work getting together for, you know, maybe lunch sometime. But when we're talking about it, we're talking about it in terms of, well, we probably won't be back in the office, so why don't we pick a place outside and bring picnic lunches, and we can all, you know, feel as comfortable as, you know, we are with what distance we want to keep, being outdoors, bringing your own food, but at least getting together and chatting. So it really has impacted how we get together with friends and family and how we've kept in touch with them and how we go about reinitiating our interactions. Who are we comfortable being with? I can tell you, if the opportunity arose and they said, oh, you know, go up and visit my family, I would not be comfortable with that because they're not all vaccinated yet. They have, if you will, extended bubbles. There's a lot of children in, you know, my great niece and or great nephews are 11 and 4. So they've been interacting with other children. None of the children can be vaccinated. And I'm still just not ready. While I have been, it's not 100%, right? You don't know what level of immunity you really got. So there are still places I'm very uncomfortable and will probably be so for quite a while. Again, one of those things, it'll be interesting to see how people go back to trying to be normal and what that looks like. And I don't know, it's just going to be interesting. There are places I feel okay. There are still places I don't.
Okay. I think I'll move on to another topic now.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. How are people around you responding to the COVID-19 pandemic?
I'm not 100% sure I understand what you're asking.
Like, people, let's say, in your community, in your local area, you know, that kind of thing, do people seem to be, you know, taking it seriously? What kind of things like that?
It seemed like at the very beginning, people weren't taking it seriously, right? And then after a couple of weeks of being in a kind of a lockdown situation and then getting mask mandates, I think people were beginning to take it a lot more seriously. Again, that was when I was still going out to stores. It started out with nobody wearing masks to most people wearing them. You could tell the ones, you know, after we had the mask mandate, who were still not taking it seriously because they wouldn't wear their mask correctly. You know, they wear it around their chin, didn't cover their nose. I think most of the people, you know, when you do go out, you see a mix of that. And now that the mask mandate is not, it's an advisory now, and that so many people have been vaccinated and that effort is still ongoing, I think that's part of my apprehension about letting go a little too soon, is it seems like people have just gone, okay, it's over. you know, watching things on the TV, you know, for Florida during spring break. And I just look at that and shake my head. You know, it's like, I understand that you want to go out and have fun, but that was a little over the top to have that many people that close together, no social distance, no mask, no. And it's like, I don't know if, you know, when you're younger, you just feel like you're invincible. But and again, I don't know. A lot of what I, you know, have is from social media or the TV, bad example. I don't think they, I see as much of the people who are taking it very seriously, other than, you know, my circle of friends. So I'm hoping that my circle of friends are more representative of most of the public, and that what we see in social media like that is actually the exception. It makes news because it is the exception.
Okay, I think, I'm sorry, if you will move on to another question.
Okay.
Now, I'd like to qualify this question by saying, if you would not wish to answer this question, feel free not to tell me you would not like to answer. And if you do answer this question, to try and not name any names and focus on your experience in dealing with the situation.
Okay.
Have you or anybody you know gotten sick during the COVID-19 outbreak? And if so, what has your experience been in responding to the sickness?
I do know people who have gotten sick. I know people who have died. And responding to that has been frustrating. For me personally, because there's so very little you can do. For the person I know who passed away and their spouse, who, you know, the difficulty there was heart-wrenching because there was nothing you could do. You couldn't go visit him. You couldn't send him flowers. You couldn't, you know, be there in person to give any support or comfort. And then after he passed away, the same thing. You really couldn't do anything support, you know, for his wife, right? Because we're not in the same bubble. And that was early on. That was like in the very first wave where, you know, everyone was locked down. And other than to send cards and, you know, let them know that you were thinking of them and keeping them in your prayers, but it's not the same. So that one was really difficult. Other people I know who have gotten COVID have had been hospitalized. And again, that's scary, but they did make it through. The same kind of frustration and things with, you don't know. I mean, that's one of the scariest things with this virus to me is you don't know. It impacts everybody differently. And you don't know what form you're going to get. You know, are you going to get the mild form? I know several people who have done, you know, tested positive, but never really had any symptoms. So the whole gamut, right? you test positive, you don't have any symptoms, you have mild symptoms, or you have more severe ones, but nothing that requires, you know, medical interventions. And then whatever the long-term effects are. I mean, even people that didn't have a severe immediate, you know, the flu type reaction still have, can have neurological issues, organ damage that could be lasting. That is scary. That's a real scary piece of it. But yeah, so I did know people from the whole range of testing positive, but not really being symptomatic, to people who have been hospitalized and people who have died. And my reaction to it, you know, anyone who tests positive, I'm highly concerned with, because you don't know the long-term impacts. So that will always be something you're thinking about, right? Will something show up later? Will I have some delayed impact that, you know, will be seen? And just the difficulty of not being able to, I guess, do what you would normally do when, you know, somebody loses their spouse or they're in the ICU, or, you know, it's uncomfortable because you can't think of a way to either help or support other than to let them know that you're thinking of them and praying for them. It's been highly frustrating.
Thank you for answering that question. I know that probably wasn't an easy question to answer. I do appreciate it.
Sure.
Okay, with that, we're going to move on to another topic, if that's all right.
Okay.
Okay. What have been your primary sources of news during the pandemic?
Well, probably the 5 o'clock news on Wish TV, which was my primary source of news. Well, maybe a secondary source of news, even prior to the pandemic. Prior to the pandemic, I probably listened, you know, driving to and from work, I listened to NPR, and that was always a source of news for me. Since I'm at home, I don't listen to NPR all that much. I don't turn the radio on. So that's been a change. But the 5 p.m. news, because I can't stay up late enough to watch the 10 p.m. news. probably the primary source. If there is something interesting through, I don't do a lot of social media. I'm on Facebook and that's about it. If something catches my eye or somebody posts something on there, I might do some of my own research. I might do some of my own research if something on the 5 o'clock news caught my attention. The problem with getting news that way is, or really any way, is you get snippets of it, right? You know, you'll hear about something that happened, but sometimes it's so out of context and you don't know the whole story that I'll do my own a little bit of internet research to figure it out. I'm skeptical of all news sources. So it's been interesting, you know. I don't think much of that changed, however, due to COVID. I've always always been a little skeptical about what we are, you know, what we're told on TV and even in a newspaper or magazine. You know, they're all trying to sell a story. So they tell you the highlights or the things that are outrageous or impactful. And then you need to go figure it out for yourself. So really, TV news is probably my primary source of news, but that's before and after the COVID pandemic.
Okay, thank you. If you're okay, I'd like to move on to the next question then.
Okay.
Okay. How have municipal leaders and government officials in your community responded to the COVID-19 outbreak?
Here in Indiana and in Indianapolis, I think they've done actually a pretty good job. The governor did a mask mandate, for the whole state. And then as things have progressed and the vaccinations have rolled out, that he made it an advisory. I have mixed feelings about that, I guess, because of where I live in Marion County. We're one of the highest cases and infection rates. And so in Marion County, we still have a mask mandate, which I think is great. But because the governor made it an advisory, a lot of people around here think that it's an advisory here also. So I guess for me personally, I would have liked to see the statewide. I understand why you would lift it from a mandate to an advisory, because not all areas needed to be under a mandate anymore. But I just, and while the municipality that I live in is still a mandate, it's really not enforceable. I don't even know how they would do it. And so therefore people are starting to ignore that altogether. I think overall Indiana has done a really nice job on reacting to it and trying to keep the spread of it under control by having mandates and asking people not to frequent restaurants and slowly opening up the state in terms of allowing 25% or 50% capacities. I think they've managed that just about as well as you can. And rolling out the vaccines, they had a plan and they stuck with it. And I think they've done a real good job with that. Right now, I think it's a lot harder, as they are trying to relax some of the restrictions we've been under. I think everybody is so, we all have that COVID fatigue. And so we take any bit of relaxation and say, it's done, it's over. So that's not the fault of our leaders. They're trying very hard to still impress upon us that it isn't all over. There are still people that are not vaccinated. It won't be for a couple months till we get everybody who wants to be. And then there's always the ones that aren't going to because they don't want to be anyway. And it really is difficult to make all those balances. I think in Indiana, they've done it well.
Okay, if you're good there, I think we'll move on to the future, if that's right.
Sure.
It's always hope for the best, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, well, I suppose here's the first one. How does this pandemic compare to other big events that have happened in your lifetime?
You know, I think I've had a fortunate lifetime that there hasn't been a whole lot of major things that have impacted me directly. Of course, I do live in my own little world. I guess I kind of compare it when somebody, you know, says, how is the future going to go back to normal after this? And we will redefine normal. I look at the 9/11 attacks and the whole country got locked down for a while, right? While they were trying to figure things out and do. And then we came back and normal started to be taking your shoes off in the airport, right? Today, you don't even question it. It's not an infringement on my rights that I have to take my shoes off, or I have to walk through a metal detector, or that I have to. There was so much that changed because of 9/11 that we consider normal now. And I think going forward, this will be the same type of thing. There will be things that are be required. Maybe it's wearing masks on airplanes, and that'll become normal. It's not not an infringement on my civil rights. It'll be the socially acceptable thing to do. I'm trying to think of other big things that happened in my life. This happened in my lifetime, but I was very young and didn't have the appreciation for it at the time. And that would be the Vietnam War. Because I think the Vietnam War, and probably, you know, the subsequent wars, you know, definitely Afghanistan and stuff, but I know the people, you know, they're of my age group that came back from Vietnam, and the psychological tolls that it took on everybody who was there, everybody I know who is a Vietnam vet, has come out with issues of some sort. Not always the same ones. And I think coming out of the pandemic or through the pandemic, I think we're going to see a lot more psychological issues. I don't think they recognize them coming out of Vietnam. As much as people are aware of psychological issues and trauma and fatigue as they did back then. So I'm hoping that, you know, there's an area that people are going to need help with and that it is better recognized now than it was, you know, late 60s, early 70s. So I think in terms of psychological trauma, this is comparable. I'm just hoping that we have better resources and acknowledgement of that today. Did that make sense?
Yes. Okay. Would it be okay if I moved on to the next question?
Sure.
Okay. Here's the big one. What can you imagine your life being like in a year?
In a year. I am hoping that within a year, we go back to whatever our new normal will be. Not back to, but move forward into our new normal. I'm hoping that, you know, within 6 months, the U.S. will be mostly vaccinated and things will begin to look like they used to. You know, we could go to a restaurant and not wear a mask. Hopefully within a year, that will be global, until things are under control globally, I don't think we can ever let our guard down totally. We're just too much of a global society anymore. And, our normal January vacations were always to go to someplace warm, right? The one we got in 2020, we went to Costa Rica. I would like to be able to do that, maybe. I'm not sure about 2022, just because when you take a vacation like that, you're interacting with people globally, from all over the world. We like to go to those all-inclusive resorts, and you have people from all over the place. And while I might be comfortable traveling in the U.S. because, I'm hoping that we will be a mostly vaccinated country with our infection rates way low, that, it's no more of a risk than getting the flu at that point, I'll be comfortable. But I know Europe's having a horrible time. And a lot of the people that go to those all-inclusive resorts come from Europe. And Europe, they're doing horribly at getting people vaccinated and convincing people that they need to be. And I'm not comfortable mingling with them. And I think even within a year, I won't be. So a year from now, I think we will be in the U.S. very much on our path to the new norm. I totally expect to be doing my own grocery shopping and not intimidated to go to a restaurant, depending on their policies, and getting together with friends and family, and not feeling like I need to maintain social distance. I think that's all plausible within a year. I think globally, anything I would want to do in a year, probably not. I just, when I talk to our coworkers that are over in Europe and the way that they've been trying to roll out the vaccines, it's just not going well at all. I can't see them being in the same place in a year. So I will probably be doing everything close to what I did normally, close to home, but I won't be as adventuresome about wanting to travel to exotic places.
Okay, and here's a similar, very related question. What do you hope your life will be like in a year?
Considering I'm retiring in September, I'm hoping that in a year where I'm going to be retired, that I would hope that globally we'd get a handle on this. In my previous answer, I was not optimistic. But if you're asking about what I hope for, that's what I would hope for. Since I will be available to travel, it would be nice to be able to go to other places. Aruba, for some reason, is on my bucket list. Not right now. And I hope that this does fade to a no more on anybody's radar screen than the flu. I hope that they have better ways of, I guess that's not my life necessarily, but I am hoping that, the medical advances that they're learning from this virus will be applied and we'll never see one of these in this magnitude again. So really, I guess my hope for a year from now is not too much different than how do I see it in a year from now, other than I would hope that globally it gets better resolved than the way it looks like it's going at the moment. So that, you know, for me, I can travel, right? It's all about me and what I would like to be doing. Also, I would like to, you know, since I am going to be retired, I haven't thoroughly thought out what I'm going to be doing, although volunteering would be on my list of things to do. And that I would hope that if I choose to volunteer for something, that there wouldn't be restrictions. I guess I've always had a soft spot for older people. And so when I was thinking about volunteering, I was thinking about, you know, maybe going to retirement centers, convalescent centers. And right now, that still wouldn't be possible. I hope that in a year when I will have that opportunity, it is possible.
Okay, I think I've just got one last closing question for you.
Okay,
this is the, knowing what you know now, what do you think individuals, communities, or governments need to keep in mind for the future?
I think they have to keep in mind that this is a pandemic. It's not the last one we'll ever have. I hope they keep in mind lessons learned, that you need to react faster to it. Got a friend of mine who is a PhD epidemiologist. And so he's been keeping, you know, this is his business. He keeps close tabs on all the news. He is one of my other news sources, by the way, if it comes to the pandemic. But, you know, he wasn't surprised at all that we had one. It was, you know, wasn't a matter of, is it going to happen? It's a matter of when. And that'll be the same going into the future. So I'm hoping they keep that in mind, that at all levels. I think that hopefully there will be lessons learned that we need to react sooner. We need to be able to give good advice at the beginning, and understanding that at the beginning, like with the beginning of COVID, there was so much unknown. There's still so much unknown, but, you know, March of last year was just so, you know, the advice was to wear masks and to wear gloves and to sanitize and to, you know, do all these things. And as we learned more, that this virus was mostly airborne and your chances of getting it from, you know, objects and touch, they relaxed all of that. So, but the messaging was done badly. What I think the general public heard was, oh, you were wrong. You don't know what you're talking about. So I'm hoping that they learn to react faster and to do a better job at messaging so that they don't lose their credibility, as they did with a lot, I think, with this pandemic, that we would have something, policies in place that, you know, when something reaches a certain threshold, that there's a reaction to it, and certainly not the reaction that our federal government had at the time. I think there needs to be better policies in place for, whether you think it's going to be a big issue or not, to react to it sooner so that it doesn't become that issue. Is that, did that answer the question?
Yes, it did. Thank you. I think unless you have any other questions, I think that will be it.
Nope,